listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right. Hey, welcome to the show today. LA Talk Radio. Love being here. Your Ultimate Life. And I've got a crazy picture behind me. I hope you're watching the video. And if you're not and you're listening to audio, you can just take a look at the video later on latalkradio.com. And check this dude out. There's a dude now. He's racing like crazy and he's moving. And it almost looked like he's wearing an astronaut suit, except for he hasn't got a helmet on. So, you know, half astronaut suit. There's a rocket ship in there and he's really blasting off. And the reason I use that picture behind me today is I want to talk about a distinction. I want to talk about the difference between surviving and thriving. Surviving and thriving. And this is, for me at least, this is like a really important topic because we have been trained by the world around us and by a lot of societal things to just operate in survival mode, like barely getting by. Now, I don't know if this is accurate. It came off some news channel, and we all know none of those can be trusted anymore. But the news said about 60% of people in the U.S. live paycheck to paycheck. And some other large percent are, you know, a couple thousand dollars away from real serious financial trouble. And another one I read said it's lucky if people have 3 months worth of cushion. You know, that kind of thing, that drives you to feel like you're just surviving, like you're barely getting by, that any even slightly larger than minor thing would wreck your life. That brings a certain poison in the bloodstream. And you might think I'm being dramatic by calling it poison, but I'm not. It is a neurotransmitter cocktail that eats your heart out. It eats your life. It eats your energy. It eats your creativity. It eats you alive from the inside. And it's a, you know, combination of adrenaline and cortisol. And it is a fatal cocktail. And you might think I'm nuts, but like a guy did a book, or a guy did a study, a doctor in New York City did a study. He wrote a book, and I read it several years ago. There's been a lot more since then, and the book's named Anger Kills. Now, that references just anger, but I have a client, a coaching client, and who's also an author, and he's an internal medicine physician, has been for 40 years, and he's retired now. But he's written a number of books, a whole bunch, and he talked about the same effects from stress, from worry, from anxiety, from, you know, rage, all of those related emotions. They're just different degrees. And the Anger Kills guy did a long-term study that talked about how many years are taken off your life when you're perpetually angry. And again, when I use the word angry, I don't want you to think rage and smashing. If you're perpetually uptight, you're perpetually on edge, you're perpetually, you know, trigger happy. And I mean in your emotions, not trigger happy. Don't dare say that stuff anymore because there's so much violence. But anyway, so I want you to think about this. A survival mindset brings the same neurochemistry to bear. Now, if you're threatened or I'm threatened physically, we have the fight, flight, freeze, right? And that is limbic brain, and you're flooded with adrenaline and your digestion and all kinds of stuff shut down in your body, and you're totally focused on survival, right? But that's only supposed to be a short-term thing. It's supposed to be for a few minutes, maybe an hour or two, you know, if you've really got a high stress, long-lasting situation. But to go on for days and days and days literally corrodes your guts, okay? And I can't remember the correlation in the book exactly, but you can look it up. The guy's name was Dr. John Sarno, and I think that was his name, and it's called Anger Kills. But anyway, it's years, 5 years, 7 years off your life if you live perpetually in a state of heightened emotion, anger, frustration, you know, being upset with life or other people or, you know, that kind of thing. So I want you to think about this. And we live in a world that perpetually triggers that. All you have to do is watch any news station. all the news. I don't care if right, left, center, up, down. They spin it, and they spin it in a way to raise your blood pressure, to get you pissed off at somebody, the other side, the dark side. So Sam and I were just talking about the stock market for just briefly before we started the show. And here's the thing. If you follow stocks, you know that the tech stocks in the last 6, 8 months, 12 months even, have become overvalued. High rise, not necessarily supported by earnings and stuff. And that leads in markets to a correction. I'm not going to pretend to be a world-class stock expert, but I know something about it. And so none of this that's happening right now is surprising me. There's a little bit of uncertainty introduced by, you know, tariffs and other things that, the president of the U.S. is doing. And I live in Canada, so I'm watching from the other side of the border. But that uncertainty is reflected, and markets tend to overreact, always. They just panic, you know, they dive up and down and overreact to stuff. They don't react cautiously. They bounce and then bounce back and wiggle. So we're going to see that over the next 3 weeks or 4 weeks, I think. And I'm not giving anybody investment advice, but that's what we typically see. Now, I want to get out of the stock market and go to real life, because remember, this show is only, I'm only doing this for one reason, and it's the same reason I do my podcast. And if you don't know, I have a podcast by the same name, Your Ultimate Life. And the purpose of the show, this show and that show, is to help you and me understand and then create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. That's all I'm doing, and I didn't used to have it, and I do now. And I know exactly the steps and the actions that I took and continue to take. So I live in perpetual joy, no matter what happens around me, stock markets, illness, people, it doesn't matter. You don't have to give away control. And that's part of the distinction between surviving and thriving. Survival comes from the idea that externalities are going to kill us, destroy us. Now, a jet engine might fall in the house and you're going to die, or I'm going to die. I'm not talking about that. But it is the worry about all the things that could happen that causes this neurochemical cocktail to eat your lunch and your guts and your brain and kill you 5 to 7 years earlier. So here's the thing. You can't do anything about externalities. You know, like we had this terrible set of fires in California a little while ago. And after the fact, they're talking about, well, we should have done more fire control, and we should have done this and should have done that. But it doesn't change the fact that that happened. Tons of people are out of, you know, don't have a home, and there's going to be years in rebuilding. Hurricanes in the eastern part of the country, the United States, the same thing. And then they can talk about all they want for preparation. And they should do that. Better prep, better this, that, and the other. But living in the state of anxiety is barely surviving. So none of that's going to be news to you. The typical response when I say something like that is, well, what do you want me to do? I'm just barely getting by. Now, I would ask a person, when was the last time you skipped a meal? When was the last time you were so late on your rent or some bill that you really thought you were going to lose something? The answer is almost always, well, no, not really, maybe a little bit. But the reality is far different than the story. The story is living at the brink where you feel like the water is right up to your nose all the time and you're ready to drown. And that's the story, when the truth is it's down around your neck or on your chest. And you're not anywhere near drowning, but you have a story because you're thinking the very next wave is going to drown me. This is a learned behavior. This is a learned behavior. I'll give you an example, and it comes right from the animal kingdom, dogs and cats. So a dog, if you have a dog and if someone mistreats the dog the first time, it's a shock to the dog. And it takes several times, and then the dog learns to be scared. They learn to cringe or pull back, right? You see that all the time on those animal rescue commercials on TV. They cringe because they've learned that behavior. They don't start there. So we teach ourselves to be uptight. We teach ourselves to live in fear and anticipation of the next disaster, even though not only is it not here, but it's probably not going to happen. Now, there are some ad hoc studies that say that, you know, some 80 to 90% of the things we worry about don't happen. And the joke, of course, is I can prove to you that worrying is effective. Worrying works. Oh, okay. Why is that? Well, it works because 90% of the things I worry about don't happen. So see, it works. And that's a joke. And it's not true because worrying doesn't do anything about it, about the occurrence, but it does kill you. Worrying wrecks your health. It wrecks your attitude. It wrecks your relationships. It wrecks your joy. And it wrecks having fun in your life because you're busy having headspace for all the stuff that might happen that hasn't happened yet. So let's talk about the other side. Survival mode, like I said, is reactive, fear-driven, scarcity-focused. You're constantly seeking not only safety, but assurances. It's not going to be bad. and that kind of feeling. Now, admit it, there are occasions when that happens, like, you know, in danger. But it is if you let it last, it's literally harmful, not only physically, but spiritually. So a thriving mode, the other side of that is a person who is proactive. They are creative. They're expansive. They're living with purpose and power. Now, none of those words mean cash. We have the idea, not everybody, but lots of people, that if I just had cash, boatloads of cash, then I wouldn't have this anxious feeling. And that is not true. That is flat not true. Cash is necessary, and we got to have enough. And if you're starving to death, then that becomes way up on the list, number one. But most people, most of us, aren't, even when we think we're in tough times. But we act and think and feel like we are. So I have a question for you. And this might be a challenge, and you might think I'm nuts, but I don't care. Are you existing? Are you just barely getting by? Are you merely existing, dodging crisis after crisis, hoping that things don't fall down around you? Or are you creating a life that you want? And again, the biggest objection I hear when I ask these kinds of questions or that directly is, well, that's easy for you to say because you're not starving. Well, no, I'm not. But I have been in the situations where things go way wrong. Huge financial. In the past, I had bankruptcy and all those things that crush the life out of you. Betrayal and on. We've all had them. I'm not claiming unique set of challenges. I have my own story and so do you. The key question that has served me is to ask, what can I create from this mess? What can I do here that will allow me to create something? Instead of assuming I'm dead. Look at that. I'm dead. There's nothing I can do. That's not ever true. Now, I saw, it's fictional, I saw a television episode of a program called MI5. Now, it's old. It was on from 2002 to 12, and it's about the British Home Security Services, MI5, not MI6. And the episode I happened to see yesterday was about a drill that they staged at the MI5 headquarters in Thames House. And the alarm went off like a major terrorist incident had happened in downtown London, and everything was cut off, et cetera, et cetera. And nobody knew it was a drill, but people were watching. The people there didn't know it was a drill. And the test was to see what can you make from this mess. And it was interesting to watch the different stages that people went through of hopelessness, of crap, nobody's coming. The cavalry isn't coming. We better do something. And those who wanted to just get up and go pout and sit in a corner. And it made me think about life. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this today. And ultimately, yeah, it's a TV show. And ultimately, the leader stepped up and did the right stuff. And, you know, congratulations and blah, blah, blah. But it made me think about, and I want to ask you the question, are you choosing to thrive even in difficult circumstances? I don't know if you've seen that video, but I saw a video on YouTube of some goats that can literally walk up the sheer face of a dam. You know, the dam is there and it's a little bit rough and it's very, very steep. And they have the ability to balance themselves and walk up there. And they do it because they eat the, and it's cliffs also. But I can't remember, there was a dam and there were also cliffs. But they're able to walk up sheer cliffs that look absolutely, utterly impossible. And if you look at that wall of cliffs, there's these goats all over it. And they're eating the little shrubs and things that grow in between the cracks of the rocks. Now, you would look at that and say that's impossible, but the goat doesn't know that. He sees the food and he says, I can go up there and get that, and does. So the idea that you can create something out of what looks like a disaster first is not new, and it is true. It's not new, and it is true. Now, in order to do that, this is what I had to do. So you might take this as a suggestion. Or as a possibility. The first thing is to decide, I am not going to be defined by my circumstance. I'm not going to let this tax bill or the loss of a job or, you know, my loved one dying or leaving me, whatever, some disaster thing. I'm not going to let that define my life. I'm just not. I choose not to. And if you can even talk about those large ones and the small ones about, you know, stuff that just didn't go your way. Are easy. Yet I see on, you know, social media and in public square and everything, people going crazy with blaming everything else instead of saying, how can I do something with this opportunity? So let's talk about that question. Are you just existing or are you creating your life on purpose? You are creating your life. Even if you're just existing, you're creating that, but it's about doing it on purpose. So our human struggle, in one sense, and this is how we're blessed as humans, we have the animal instincts that are really focused to survival, safety, enough food, not getting attacked, you know, that kind of thing. And those are our instincts, and they served us and serve us in very limited situations. But that intense reaction doesn't serve us in 95% of our lives. Yet if we live with that feeling of being ready to drown every minute in our circumstance, then we end up hindered in our ability to create. Because one of the things that happens when we get uptight is our creativity disappears. The creative functions in our brain are shut off. We get narrow vision. A lot of physiological stuff happens also. But we get stupid. Except with a narrow focus on survival. Our animal instincts come from fear, aggression, self-preservation, and really short-term thinking. And in all but a very limited set of circumstances, those don't serve us. Our creative yearning is vision, imagination, purpose-driven actions, big stuff that we can see out there and we yearn for and want to do. Now, I'm not negating the urgency of some circumstances. But what I'm saying is we stay in that mode of urgency way too long. So let's talk for a minute about how to shift that. I have a tool that I teach people, and it's really simple. And it's called Notice and Choose. Three words, notice and choose. And the power of this comes from the fact that we don't stop very often at all and just notice how we're feeling. We react from it. Something happens, we're scared, we're angry, we want to strike back or we want to run or whatever. And so we react from the stimulus. But we don't just notice, stop. Wow, I'm feeling frightened. I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling sad or betrayed. I'm feeling that. Because remember, those feelings, they are simply neurochemistry that is generated by our bodies from memories and from beliefs. So we see a situation, we believe something about it, and that belief creates the feeling. if we don't believe a situation, it doesn't create the feeling. I'll give you an example. If you look at a picture and you see it's a picture of a lion and you don't perceive any danger from the picture, then it doesn't raise your blood pressure. If, on the other hand, somehow that picture was animated and it felt like it was lunging at you, it would generate a physical response because you believe it. So monitoring what you're thinking and believing, where am I? Notice, taking a minute to notice, and then say, now that I notice I'm feeling like that, what do I choose to do? Just because we have a feeling doesn't mean we need to act on it with the first impulse. And in fact, that often comes from the limbic system, from the amygdala, the lizard brain, that sort of thing. Not just in fight, flight, freeze, but in, you know, lashing, instantaneous, they call them knee-jerk reactions. There's a book about that called The Wedge by Patrick Carney, and it talks about super extreme athletes that do different things. It was one lady that kept winning this, I think it was a 24-hour exposure race, and she didn't have the physique at all, and, you know, just not expected, but she's won it many times. And talking about it, she was interviewed in the book, among with many others. She said it was her ability to take the wedge in between the stimulus of the freezing thing and the mud and the external stuff and her reaction. The normal reaction would be, get me out of here. I can't do this. Leave me alone. I got to run and hide. I got to quit. No, she was able to take advantage of that notice and choose. I notice that's what I'm feeling, and I'm choosing not to react that way. That there's another example that I can give you that I did that with, and that is ice baths. So when I first started taking ice baths, and I literally mean a tub 2/3 full of water and ice, like there's floating ice all over the place. It's cold as I can get the water. When I first got in there, the reaction is, I can't stand this. I'm going to die. I got to get out. And by doing that wedge, by separating it and realizing that it was just my organ, my dermis, that's what the skin's called. My dermis is cold. That is a fact. It is freezing cold. That is a fact. But I also know it isn't going to kill me. I also know it's going to end. And therefore, I can just breathe through this. And by taking advantage of that wedge, I learned to do 10 to 15 minute ice baths in very, very cold ice water. And so that's exactly the same thing as was described in that book. And it's an interesting book. It's called The Wedge. You might want to take a look at it. So there's another thing. So notice and choose is the first tool to go from surviving to thriving. There's another thing to think about, vibrations. Now, in the woo-woo land, we talk about high vibes, low vibes. You know, we talk about those things. Ooh, good vibrations, you know. And there's a reason for that. There's actually a pyramid. You can look it up about vibrational frequencies and low frequency vibrations, hate, fear, anger, frustration, jealousy, rage, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they give numbers on that pyramid, and I'm not going to say them because they don't matter. But up toward the top, you know, the vibration level increases, hundreds, 100, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And it gets up to the higher vibrations of love, creativity, fear, you know, enlightenment, all that kind of stuff. Well, the idea of the wedge is that you get to decide where your vibration is. You're not subject to the externalities. You get to pick. And if you can't do that right now, that's okay. But you can learn. You can learn to adjust the vibration. And one of the things that I do, and I have learned that, I have mastered that. And so I tell you that not to say yay me, but to tell you that it's possible, because I used to suck at it badly. And I felt completely as a victim of all the circumstances around me, and I couldn't control anything. And it was really frustrating, and I felt like I was a victim of upbringing, of circumstance, of externalities, of other people's behaviors, etc. And then I went on a quest to learn how to control that thinking and direct it where I wanted it, and that includes raising my level of consciousness, my vibration, as it were. So there's a book that I have called Living with Purpose and Power. I've mentioned it a time or two before. And if you want to learn how to do that, to raise that vibration up so you can get yourself all the way up to peace anytime you want, no matter what's going on. Living with Purpose and Power. It's in all the Amazon stores. Living with Purpose and Power. It reminds me of a funny commercial I saw on TV that had nothing to do with meditation or anything else. It has to do with allergies. And maybe you've seen it, but there's this great big green monster covered with moss and just charging through the city square, and all the people are running and screaming. You know, you've seen a monster movie. It's like that, only the monster is the allergies coming to eat your lunch. And then there's some one or two people that have used the particular medication that they're advertising, and they're just hanging out peacefully, checking out the monster. Can't hurt me. And that's because they have taken control and done something that negates the power of the monster. Now, I realize that's allergies and it's supposed to be funny. And it is. And you can do that with your emotions. You can intentionally move your state to thrive and abundance. Now, if I ask you how much energy is in the universe, you'll answer without even thinking, infinity. There's infinity energy in the universe. There's no end to it. We're now discovering that even the vacuum of space, what we used to think was completely empty, is not empty at all. It's stuffed with energy. And how that works, quantum, you know, physics, particles popping in and out of existence according to a given probability distribution. Okay, we're not going to talk about that. But what we know is that it's full of energy. Here's the secret. You and I can access that. Isn't that cool? There's tons of books that have been written about that and scientific experiments that show that our thinking affects the energy around us. Even things like proton distribution and stuff like that in the laboratory. It's astounding. So read up on that if you want the scientific proof. But what matters is own it and learn to do that. Again, I would recommend you read Living with Purpose and Power. Here's what I do. I have a process that I go through every day. I call it a DCP, Daily Creation Process. And I use those words instead of morning routine or morning ritual because the others are so cliche, first of all. And second of all, because they don't even begin to do justice to what I have developed. And that's all revealed in the book, Living with Purpose and Power. And it's not a secret. We just don't have time to talk about it all today. But low vibrational states, when you start your day, would be anger, fear, jealousy, victimhood. Oh, no, today's going to be terrible. That would be low vibe states. What if you could, on purpose, no matter how you wake up, move yourself up into gratitude, love, inspiration, creation, until you are excited about your day? You are leaning in, and you have the ability to do that all day, anytime you want, because when things happen, they happen. But you could go back to your daily creation process and in just a few minutes shed all that negative stuff and be right back up to power, creation, creativity, love, focus. Okay? And there's another book that you might want to take a look at. It's called, Walking Without Fear. Walking Without Fear, and there's some exercises in there and some illustrations that will give you tools to control your own emotional state and to eliminate fear from your life. All right, now I want to shift gears completely and talk about another thing that decides whether you're in survival mode or thrive abundance mode, and that is, where is your focus with respect to the world around you? Are you most focused on what you need? I need this. I got this. I got to get mine. I'm focused on getting. I'm focused on recognition. I got mine. I'm focused on proving I'm somebody. I'm better than. Yeah, I'm all that. If that is the substance of your thinking, that is the survival mode. And again, it is poison. And the thing is, I mean, you know people that are attention whores. It doesn't matter how much attention they get, they want more. There's never enough. Never enough. It has to be instant, infinite, and continuous, right? And that's because it's not satisfying. True satisfaction comes from inside, not outside. So where is your focus? Are you thinking about what I need? I got mine. I'm going to do this. Me, what's in it for me? WIIFM. So again, this is a notice and choose exercise. Am I focused on me? What I need, what I'm going to get? Is that my primary focus? Now, I'm not talking about, gee, I got to get something to eat. I better do that. And you know I'm not. And if you're twisting what I'm saying into that, then you're doing it on purpose. Instead, an alternative, the thrive mindset, is service. How can I help you? What do you need? What have I got that would bless your life? What can I offer you that would make your life easier, better, faster, more fun, lift your burden, bless your heart? And I don't mean sales. Like, I'm a coach, okay, and you know that. So I sell, as it were, coaching services. What is that? I sell people getting to their next podium, just like an athletic coach. You pick a podium you want to be on, I can help you get there. You pick an accomplishment you want, I'm the best at getting you up that ladder on that podium. Okay, so that's what I do. But, and I say but because I don't ever go to sell those services. When I meet new people, and I meet several new ones a week on Zoom and in person, and I do this on purpose. I set my life up this way because I want to meet new people. I love them. My only thought is, I'd like to know about you so I can understand how your life's going, what's going good, what you need, and whether or not I can help you, period. Not, does it match one of my service offerings? Does it? I don't even care. I don't think about that. Now, that was a learning. I had to do that because I used to think about it in terms of, well, I wonder if they'll be a client. I wonder if they need life insurance. I don't sell life insurance, but coaching or whatever. I've trained myself never to think about it. And you know what's remarkable? That training means that I never have to worry about clients. Hear that. I never have to worry because they come automatically. They come automatically because I just go in to serve. I go in to figure out, how can I help you? What do you need? And maybe you don't need anything. And the answer is, hey, rock and roll. I'm glad you're living the fabulous life. Glad to know you. You're amazing. And then we keep in touch. So it isn't about only talking to those who might need something. It's about learning to love and serve. So a survive mindset is self-centered. The thrive mindset is, there's enough for all of us, and I'm out here to help you get yours. Now, there's several famous sayings about that. Zig Ziglar's credited with saying, you can have anything you want if you help enough other people get what they want. And there's several versions of that floating around. But it means go be in service. And that does two things. People love you. You feel better, because remember we talked in the beginning about neurotransmitter cocktails that kill you. There's a different neurotransmitter cocktail that the body produces when you're serving and lifting and blessing. There's a lot of oxytocin, serotonin, and dopamine. Those are the feel good, jolly, yeah, right? Anandamide is called the bliss molecule. Anandamide, it's, I think, the most recently discovered neurotransmitter. I could be wrong. Correct me if you want. It's literally called the bliss molecule. Those are what show up when we're loving and serving others. So isn't that interesting? The body responds to that. And then when you're in that state of mind, you get more creative, more loving. You're nicer to be around. So all of a sudden, instead of driving people away with what's in it for me, you're drawing people toward you because you're there for them. They feel better. You feel better. You live longer. You're healthier. And I have noticed repeatedly and continuously, I have more business, make more cash, and my bank account gets fat. So you can think of it as selfish too. Service can be selfish. In fact, I know a guy who's a good friend of mine. He says, I'm selfish. And he's not. But he starts some of his talks that way. And he talks about the reward that you get by being in service, which is not only those feel-good hormones, but also the cash, the business. People want to do business with people that are loving and in the mode of service. Okay. Now we're going to talk about another big shift between survival mindset and thrive and abundance mindset. If you're surviving scarcity, it's focused around there's not enough. I got to get mine because we're going to run out. There's not enough money, time, good stuff. Somebody else is going to get the good stuff. I'm going to be left with nothing. If you think that, you will create it so you can prove that it's true. See, I knew there wasn't going to be enough, and you created that. Because our thoughts influence reality. And you can argue with that and say, you know, bullshit, because you can't see thinking and having quarters drop on the table or golden eagle gold pieces, right? But that isn't how creation works anytime ever. So your thinking affects reality. And if you say there's not enough, then there's not. And that will be your continued experience as you continue to reinforce and go create that. Another even worse version of that is, I'm not enough. I suck. There is not enough is one version of that. Worse version is, I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I can't cut it. I can't do it. I'm not worthy or worth it, or, you know, it's not my lot, or some version of that poison. And it's literally poison. Okay, if you're in a thrive mindset, you're like, opportunities are limitless. And that's actually the truth. There is no shortage of opportunity. There is a shortage of people willing to look for it. There is a shortage of people willing to go create it. There is a shortage of people willing to do the work to get it, because we've poisoned ourselves with the idea that everything's got to be easy and handed to us. We have an addiction to mediocrity and an entitlement mentality that chokes a horse. We think everything is owed to us just for breathing. It's not. But it's available to go get. So the question, and the easiest way to go get it, is to understand opportunities are limitless and live in a thrive and abundance mindset instead of scarcity and starvation. I'm not enough. There isn't enough. I'm not good enough. And to me, that one resonates like all the way down to the core of my heart, because I live so much of my life believing with all my heart that I wasn't good enough. That was my favorite one. I knew good stuff was out there for somebody, but I didn't deserve any. I can't have it. So that was my poison. And I drowned in that poison for decades. Another way to think about that is, my value is infinite instead of I'm not good enough. The truth is, you and I were created by the same divine universe, the same one intelligence. I use the word God because it speaks to me. But that governing intelligence created both of us on purpose, with love, with gifts and talents, and with limitless opportunities. The real question is, who among us is going to grab a hold of those and build something? Who is going to make it happen? Because they're hanging there waiting. And they're there for us to have. So here is an action step to shift your attitude. If you find yourself in the scarcity mindset, it's not enough, I'm not good enough, you know, that kind of thing. I got to fight for, you know, the limited pie. Practicing gratitude. Now, you've heard that and I can hear the groan already. Gratitude creates a special neurochemical cocktail. It's astounding. It's amazing. And it produces actions, attitudes, radiant energy, and abundance. It literally causes the universe to pour good luck on you. And you can argue with me, but then I would challenge you and say you haven't really had a valuable gratitude practice for an extended period of time. Now, if you'll take this challenge for 90 days, you will get results. Now, there's lots of ways that people talk about creating gratitude, and some of them are gratitude journal, write down things you're grateful for. Some people do a rampage of appreciation where they list 50 things they're grateful for. I don't like either one of those. I'm not saying they're bad. I just don't find them effective. What I find effective about gratitude is this. There are things that happen in my life and yours where we have the neurotransmitters, the core feeling of gratitude. Like something really good happens, or something really bad was avoided. Like, I was driving at night on a freeway in Phoenix one night many years ago, and it was dark. I had worked swing shift, so it was 11:30 and I was going home. And I was on the fast lane of an overpass that went around a curve, corner, a curve. And, you know, those overpasses in the air, elevated freeway, they don't have a lot of room on the left side. There's a white line and then the railing, right? And someone had pulled over and tried to squeeze into that little space between the white line and the railing. And, of course, they were half in the fast lane. And it was dark and there were no street lights up there. And so I went there. I was driving and I was driving a little sports car. So I was probably driving too fast. But anyway, I saw it and just, you know, instinctually ripped the steering wheel over and back. And the sports car handled really well. So I was spared from that. And it affected me so badly that in about 40 seconds down the road under another underpass, I had to pull off the road, you know, catch my breath and thoughts. It was that intense. But the feeling that I noticed wasn't fear. It was this overwhelming gratitude that I had seen it, that I'd reacted, that I was blessed, that I avoided what would have easily could have been a fatal collision, et cetera, et cetera. So that got me thinking, wow, what does it take? Again, that's an externality causing that. What can I do to intentionally create that feeling of intense gratitude? And here's what I do. I think about something that I know I'm grateful for. An easy example is I'm married to an angel. So how could I not be grateful for that? But all I have to do is focus on her. Think about all the things that she is to me and for me, all the blessing I've been given to have her in my life for now 17 and a half years, and how many million more years I'm looking forward to every precious line on her face and eye and hair strand and everything. And when I just sit and think about that precious gem, in a minute or two, those neurotransmitters come and I'm overwhelmed with gratitude. And sometimes I even weep. And it doesn't have to be your loved one. It can be some other thing. But you need to spend a little time with it. Because if you do, and it's something you really are grateful for, and you think about the nuances and the true benefit of that thing and how grateful you are, it will create the neurotransmitters of gratitude, and you will have that experience. And you know right what I'm talking about. That experience, those neurotransmitters are life extending rather than life reducing. They cause us to be creative. They cause us to be loving. They cause us to do things for ourselves, our clients, and others. They cause us to go right to that place of service and love I was talking about earlier. And though they're good, anandamide and oxytocin and serotonin and dopamine and all those things, they just pour in abundance. And, you know, the nuances of feelings that we have are just different proportions of those neurotransmitters. And there's an infinite number of cocktails. But you can create that experience of absolute radical gratitude. And it is so valuable. All right. So we've got time maybe for one more. And this is about the fear aspect of how we allow fear to either dominate or simply not participate in our lives. Now, I wrote a book about that called Walking Without Fear. And that happened, that the event that spurred the writing of it was in December of 2018, which is now 7 years ago or 6.5 years ago or something. I woke up on December 5th paralyzed from the waist down. And I no warning, no idea why that would happen. And it was, you know, shock. I tried to get out of bed and fell on my face on the floor next to the bed. And I tried to get up on my hands and knees even and fell on my face because nothing below the waist was working. And I went to the hospital and turned out, you know, there an abscess of MRSA, fatal bacteria, had formed in my spinal column and calcified and was putting pressure on my spinal column. But the point is, I had this experience and I had an unbelievable manifestation on the way to the hospital about what had happened and what was going on and everything. And I didn't know if I was going to walk again. I was in staggering pain. And it turned out that there was an operation that took place immediately. I went from the ER to the OR and got operated on immediately. And I don't have time to tell the story, but you can read it. And it's mind-blowing. And Walking Without Fear. And that event caused me to write the book. And what it taught me is you and I, we don't need to experience fear. Fear is a construct of the mind. It is a set. It's real. We allow it because of our thinking, but it doesn't come into being until we believe something. If something happens and we don't believe anything about it, you will never feel fear. If you believe it's dangerous, it's going to hurt me, I'll be embarrassed, I'll be scared. Think about public speaking, which is often rated as the fear worse than that. Maybe not for you, but for many. And it has to tie to believing you're going to not exist anymore. Somehow the embarrassment's going to kill you. Well, that's never happened. But what I learned through that experience and then writing the book is that you and I, we don't need to live in fear. You can live your life without fear. And if that seems impossible to you right now, read the book or let's talk, or and both. Read the book and then let's talk. And again, if you want to get a hold of me in any of these invitations, there's a URL on the screen, KellenFlukigerMedia.com. KellenFlukigerMedia.com, and there's a contact form, and let's talk. Because fear is not part of a required existence. Scarcity-based or survival-based is fear-based. It's avoiding risk, playing small, you know, seeking external approval, all that kind of stuff. And if you're in the thrive mindset, instead of fear, you are in what I will call faith-based living. And I'm not talking religion, a particular religion, but I am talking spirituality. Faith is the certainty that you and I have that we have power. We can do stuff. Faith is the moving cause of action. If we didn't think we could stand up, we wouldn't try. If we didn't think we could get rid of our hunger, we wouldn't eat. Faith, or a belief that a resolution or change is possible, is literally the moving cause of action in all intelligent beings. And so when you choose to live, instead of from fear, from faith, again, as a spiritual construct or an energetic construct, then you embrace uncertainty. It doesn't make you uncomfortable. We don't know the outcome, but that's okay. You also learn one of the most valuable things that I've ever learned, and that is to hear and trust your intuition. Okay, one of the like I said, the most valuable things I've learned in my now 17 and a half year journey from where I was destroyed in 2007 to today is learning to hear intuition. And then learning to simply act boldly and trust it and take bold and decisive action based on that intuition. Now, the exercise you can do with that is instead of projecting a worst case scenario, go with possibility driven choices. What is possible here? And the thinking about that is act as if success is inevitable, because you know what? It actually is. That's not fake it till you make it, and we're not pretending. If I start on a road and I keep walking, I will get to the destination. So success is inevitable if we're willing to walk the road and keep going. And so when I look at something and say, I can do that, I may not know how or how long, but I know I'm going to get there. Like my goal of 300 million. I know I'm going to reach 300 million people this year. I know that's going to happen. I don't have the details and don't know how, but I know. And I'm acting as if I'm living in the present moment. I see that happening. And you can learn to do that too. So I want you to think about your own life, please. Are you surviving with the poison and the fear and the negative stuff that goes on with that? Or are you consciously choosing to live in the thinking of thriving, which is creating your future? Notice and choose. Live into your possibilities, eliminating fear, realizing that there's infinite abundance and the pie is not limited. Those are foundational truths. And you can't snap your fingers, but I can promise you that wherever you're starting, you can get to a place of abundance and thrive. My mission is to help you do that. I'd love to speak with you, to get to know you, and to love you even more than I already do. Because I know that if you want it, and you're willing to walk the road, there's nothing, And I repeat, absolutely nothing that can prevent you from having joy and creating every day your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.